You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Alex Soth. Hey, Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so excited. Do you mind, for our listeners who may not know you, can you introduce yourself and kind of give a background on how you got into photography?
Sure. Yeah. So I am a photographer living in Minnesota. The world of photography is so gigantic. And I think a lot of us live in our little, you know, bubbles is the common term, I guess we use these days. But and you sort of end up thinking it's the whole photography world, and it's not at all.
Totally true. Yeah.
Right.
And so how do I define my little room in this castle of photography? It's I guess it's in that funny realm between like documentary photography and fine art photography. Sort of the, you know, one of the American gods of this would be Walker Evans, I suppose, who called it documentary style photography. So I kind of come out of that tradition, though I came to photography from a purely fine art side of things. So I wanted to be a painter and then a sculptor and wrote poetry and was doing, you know, like was over there. So I was not in the world of journalism, for example. And discovered photography in college and then discovered around that time that, oh, there's no way I can make a living doing this. And so what am I going to do? And, you know, after college, I dabbled in some commercial, you know, like commercial assisting, that kind of thing. And I'm like, well, this has nothing to do with why I want to do photography. And so worked like photo related jobs, but didn't have ambition to really make a living as a photographer. I just sort of gave up on that, pursued my personal work for, you know, about a decade and then got lucky and suddenly had a career.
Boom.
I kind of went through that fast, but you can ask me questions. Now I am a professional photographer. I make a living from it in all sorts of different ways, in the fine art world, in the magazine world, and I've got a lot of balls in the air, I guess.
That's good. That's good. And I can totally relate. I've always wanted to be, I said it before on the show, I've always wanted to be, you know, this painter and artist. Yeah. I always had this dream. And then I put the, you know, I put the pen to paper and I'm just like drawing stick figures and, you know, the old clouds and the birds with the sun. And it was just, I tried so hard, but yeah.
That's cool. I mean, one funny thing about my, like my bio right now is it says I'm with the agency Magnum Photos. And so that in a lot of people's minds, that means photojournalism and it's something a lot of people aspire to. And so they assume I aspire to that. Like I didn't, that wasn't my goal as a young photographer. Like I was aware of Magnum, but it was just like over there in a different sphere. Mm-hmm. So it is a little complicated to explain. It's one of those things where, like, if I'm on a plane sitting next to someone and they ask what I do, I'm like, oh no. I don't want to say photographer because it gets so complicated
It. Yeah. I've like pinpoint as like tiny as I can when I get asked that question. Because it's just like, oh, I do on-set photography. Like, or I'll just pick one of the things that I do.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that's smart. I mean, it's just, I get in trouble. Yeah. Because I want to be honest and it's just nothing feels right. And,
right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's so true. Yeah. That's really funny.
Yeah. Man, and just one more thing on that. Like, my boss, I work at a music store, and we're trying to, like, switch over stuff online, like, get our products online and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And they know I'm a photographer. I mean, I carry three cameras with me wherever I go. And they just automatically assume that I'm going to be taking these amazing photos of flutes for them. And it's like, do you understand product photography is, like, a total other world than what I do? You know, and it's just funny how that happens.
No, absolutely. And, yeah, because, yeah, people have all sorts of ideas. Understandably, I'm sure this happens in every career. You know, you're like a psychiatrist and everyone wants to talk to you, whatever it is. But yeah, and I have to say, like, coming on this podcast, I was nervous because like, there's going to be tech talk. And I have to tell you something. This is funny because last week I was in Berlin and I did this book signing and they wanted me to like say a few words. So I did like an impromptu like thing and I asked for questions and someone asked me what camera I use. And I was like, oh shit. I couldn't remember the name of the brand of the camera. And so then right before this interview, I was like to Ethan, my student manager, I was like, what's the name of my camera? Yeah. And I was like, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to whoever is listening to this because it's, wow, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Well, luckily I'm the one who, I'm not technical and I run into that problem all the time where people, I'm like, I don't remember what it's called. God. Or like what lens it is. Yeah. That's kind of reassuring. Now I feel not so bad about it.
And me being on the other end, I'm so jealous of that. I'm like, I wish I could just be like, it's the camera, you know, and I bring it with. Now I'll name you every spec and lens and year it was made. And
no, and I have to say, like, so when I was younger, I was more into it. So in my 20s, you know, when I'm learning everything and I'm like figuring it out and getting really excited about, oh man, that new camera. But something changed along the way. And I kind of settled. And I think about this a lot with digital technology because it's like, you know, Photoshop 3 or whatever is like, was like the jam for me. And now, and now it's like, you know, fortunately I have people that like stay up on everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I as much as I can, I do stuff the old fashioned way in Photoshop, which I realize is dumb. I don't know how to use Lightroom. Like, check that out. People are freaking out.
They're like, wah.
I know.
Man. But I like that because it doesn't get in the way then, I feel like. Then you can just focus on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm so lucky because I have, you know, like a studio manager who's went to RIT, he knows everything about everything and he can just deal with it. So that's the ideal scenario, you know, and I can put my attention elsewhere.
Right.
But, you know, there are other things that I do. So I like do podcast interviews, right? So, and that takes a certain amount of time, which is great. But I put my energy into these other areas, but it's not always like going directly back into going out to take pictures.
Man, so are you pretty set? Like, are you into trying new cameras and stuff? Like, I just didn't know if you just had your quiver and that's what you went with.
No. And part of the reason I struggled to come up with that. So what, if you want to talk about cameras?
I mean, we can touch on that.
No, it's interesting because I actually don't talk about it that much, but didn't you say like one of the last questions is going to be about my favorite camera? So maybe I'm not supposed to talk about that right now. But I had a favorite camera. I dropped it. It was not whatever. It's not replaceable. And so then I ended up getting an Ebony 8x10 camera, which I liked, but it was just not the same as the old one. And then something went out of whack with it that I've never understood. And I had a kind of disastrous trip where things, the focus was strange.
Oh, no.
And so then not too long ago, I got this new one and we like, how do we call this? Chamonix?
Is that how we pronounce it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Chamonix.
I love this.
I have a Chamonix 8x10. And so I like that camera. Nothing replaces the first one. Anyway, I use that, but then I use digital cameras of all sorts. Maybe we're not supposed to talk about those on the
podcast.
But I use a variety of things. I'm working on a moving image project right now. So that's what's really interesting about the moving image world is I just feel like those guys over there, they're dealing with so many things.
Yep.
And it we're like little babies over here. Uh-huh. You like go to like a rental house in the cinema world.
And it's insane.
Your mind blows with the options. And I've even, check this out, I've even played with, you know, all sorts of crazy vintage lenses on digital cameras. I've done, I like play around. It's kind of project dependent and they generally are small experimental side things. And my longer term work is generally, has mostly been with 8x10 camera, though I did one big series with the Hasselblad digital. So
that was Songbird? Is that the
Songbook? Songbook. And I you know, my bird. Background age wise, I don't know how old you guys are, but how old are you guys?
40. I'm 41.
I'm 38.
38. Okay.
About to be 39.
So I'm 52 and I'm just really aware that like that I was raised pre-digital,
mm-hmm. you know.
It was baked in at that point that you take photographs in order to save things and you save it on this material and then you maybe make a print later that's another kind of material. And so that was baked in and the trajectory of that was the photographers I discovered that I loved were often large format. So I did 4x5 like right away, like really early on, but then got out of school and like couldn't afford it and all that stuff and ended up finally getting a medium format camera, Pentax 6x7.
Great camera.
Which I loved and did all my work for many, many years, like figuring things out with that and then got some grants. And I saw a number of photographers that I loved use the 8x10 and they were like quite different types of photographers. So everyone from Sally Mann to Nicholas Nixon to Stephen Shore, also different. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. And then I tried it and I fell in love.
Yeah. How can you not? Oh,
yeah. Well, you cannot because you can pay the, you know.
The pocketbook gets a little destroyed.
The pocketbook. And also at that time, so then I invested in a color processor. I had an 8x10 enlarger. But then, you know, it's like the technology kept changing. Mm-hmm. And that has been really frustrating. Part of this, I dislike a lot of the technical problems due to technology changing.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, man.
So the thing about the draw to 8x10 that is a misconception, I think, is that is sharpness. It's not about sharpness. It's because like the difference between 4x5 and 8x10, I don't know. It's negligible. And now like digital cameras are significantly sharper than my 8x10 camera. So it's not that. The draw for me is twofold. One is the experience of working with it. I stand back rather than lean in. So even with the 4x5, you're like leaning into the thing. And with the 8x10, it's like a painting on an easel. And it just changes. It's just like I take it in, you know? It's just different.
Yeah.
And then, but the biggest thing for me is the way it renders space. So it's just like a 300 lens, like just like carves things out of space in a certain sort of way. And I just love that. I just love the way it treats space. And if I could have that in a different way, I might take it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be like really patient with large format in general.
Yeah, there's a way you can mimic that with digital. You can put it on a tripod and slow things down.
Yeah.
I even tried one, the beginning stages of my digital photography, I would use, you know, I would drive around with a laptop on a separate monitor, you know, so like I'm mimicking that feeling and slowing things. I really had to, because things had to be tethered or else there were all sorts of problems. And but in the end, it just doesn't treat space the same way in a funny way. So
yeah, I've never gotten into 8x10. I mean, again, just money situations. I haven't found the right deal. But even with 4x5, it's such a, I get that. Like it has a, there's just something you can't replicate with even a medium format camera. There's just a look to it that
it's like
has
3D almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and everything, you know, it's so nuanced. Like I was talking to someone yesterday about New York bagels, and there's this whole thing about how the water in New York, and so like I heard some story about them like shipping water out to some place. and it's, why is that? It's because people are connoisseurs. So once you reach the level of connoisseurship, you feel these slight, very slight differences that most people aren't going to notice at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's these little tiny things that most people don't care about. Maybe some other photographers care about, but I can feel it. And so then I get into it and I,
That's a really good like explanation for, you know, anytime you show anybody who's not, is deeply invested in photography as like we are, and, you know, they'll be like, oh, that's a good shot. It's like,
totally,
no, this is, what do you mean? Like, I, like, this is crap. Like,
no, but it's like a wine connoisseur, you know, giving me a glass of wine. I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's tasty. You know, and it's just like, I can't get into those nuances because I haven't studied them, you know?
Right.
That's,
I love that.
So true. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, there's kind of a, like a specific question about your process of when you photograph people in the nude. We talk a lot about this show, like being afraid to ask like a person on the street, like, hey, can I grab your portrait really quick?
Sure.
But then you add the level of like, hey, I'd also like to do it in the nude and like not in a, you know, nice studio with like moody lighting. So like, don't worry. Can you talk us through that? Because that is just, to me, I love those images, and I just want to hear more about that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't start off doing that, I should say.
Right.
And I mean, the number one question that I'm asked is about how I photograph people, how I get permission. Everyone's curious about that. And because not everyone, but a lot of people are scared about it. Mm-hmm. And I was,
I'm one of them. Yeah.
Myself included. Yeah.
When I absolutely was, for sure. Didn't do it in college at all.
Yeah.
Didn't do it for a couple years after that. And then I was like, you know what? I got to deal with it, because that same thing where I was looking at the photographers I loved and they're doing it. And I'm just like, I gotta just like deal with this. And it was nerve wracking as hell, but it became essential to my work. And I realized it was like the gasoline for it. It was like, it's where I got the energy, and I wanted to, I really like to this day would love to be a landscape photographer, because I still, it's exhausting. There's a lot of it I don't enjoy, but it energizes the work. And then I found that I got even more energy if I could get into someone's house, because it's like the intimacy. So like, it's one thing to be on the street stopping someone, but it's like you get to see their world and their environment. And then, oh, can I see the bedroom? Can I see the more intimate spaces? And really, nudity is just like an extension of that. It's just like, let's, you know, I want to see everything. I want to like turn up the intensity dial. And I should say that I haven't taken a nude picture in a zillion years. But at that particular time, I was like, I kept turning the dial up on the intensity for intimacy intensity. And it's different now, my relationship to that, and also my like the ethics surrounding it and all
right.
So like you said, you don't do the you know, you haven't done nudes in a while and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that just, I was thinking of when you, because you said I got your Magnum course, I got and I listened to that, and just the you going through your Niagara and, you know, just mm-hmm. how you kind of had to turn it up because it was your,
yeah, exactly.
you know, your sophomore book and you were trying to, you know, keep your...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also it was project related too. I mean, both thematically and also like I being in this not so like this quite limited photographic situation, I needed more to put more meat on the bone essentially. And that was a way to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, you say you haven't done it in a while. And it's probably, it would be harder now because I feel like people would be like, well, where is it going to go? Is it going to go viral on social media? You know, like,
yeah.
No, I think more people would be apt to be like, no, like, versus like then it wasn't, that wasn't a thing they had to worry about.
Yeah. And obviously like, you know, gender politics and all that mm-hmm. kind yeah. of stuff too. I had a really interesting conversation with someone last week about they were talking about women and gay people photographing themselves nude or with you know, just photographing themselves and they were saying like who are the straight guys mm-hmm. doing this
mm-hmm. yeah
and I found some examples that were almost always older men in the past
yeah.
that were like you know that they're kind of dealing with aging but I have a harder time thinking about you know a 30-year-old guy straight guy doing self-portraits. And
right.
it was just interesting to reflect on that. So yeah, so this like the ground is shifting in lots of good ways in the way we think about these things. That's not entirely the reason I'm not doing that. I'm just like in a different whatever. Just
yeah,
dealing
yeah.
with different things. Yeah.
Just portraits in general with, I mean, not even being in nudes. I just always feel like I was thinking about this because I went through a little bit of a slump where I just wasn't motivated to take any mm-hmm. photos, you know, people, landscape, anything. I mean, I sure. just didn't want to, the pandemic and
totally.
Just how,
me too.
Anyway, but
yeah.
I'm starting to get into this. I used to work at a restaurant, so it was really easy for me to, you know, meet people and, you know, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, you take photos. They're great. Come do some family right. photos and stuff. And usually there was a transaction there. It's like, yeah, you give me a couple ones that I want to do, and then I'll give you your family photos
right.
as well kind of thing. And is it ever transactional like that for you? Or was it like that in the beginning? Or do you just kind of, you know, you just go in with raw honesty of like, I just want to capture you in your environment
right.
type of thing.
Right. Good question. Yeah. Because I didn't really, really answer the question of how do I get people naked, for example. and so the way I do it is I explain what I'm doing. And,
yeah.
and this goes back to where we started of people not understanding. But
yeah.
I nonetheless try to explain it. So in the example of Niagara, and just for people listening, I did a project in Niagara Falls, but it was more about love and longing and themes like that than it was about the falls itself. And I would meet someone, I would photograph someone, whatever, meet them somewhere. And then I would explain. And I might, you know, at that time, then I had a book published in the past. So I could say mm-hmm. like, you know, I did this book on the Mississippi River, but it's not really about the Mississippi River. Now I'm in Niagara Falls. I'm doing a project about love, but it's not really about Niagara
yeah.
Falls and
yeah, yeah.
and I you know I'd love to photograph you and I'm looking for this kind of intimacy. Could I photograph you? You know, like explain it. Maybe I've developed a relationship with them already where I photographed them once. I've given them a print so they trust me. You know, it's like it's a thing of earning trust.
Mm.
And I've found that explaining things, even if people don't understand it, and it sounds so weird, like you wouldn't make it up.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And people just kind of respond to that. What's been hard is just as I've gotten more professional, I'm just like, I think I can be too slick. I can be like too confident.
You know? Gotcha. Yeah.
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 And being younger, you know, like helps. But the other thing is you use what you have. So if you're a student, you get to say, I'm student. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm in class. I'm
yeah.
supposed to take portraits of people on the street. That's why I'm doing this.
Huh.
And if you're a woman, you use the fact that you're a woman that like you can photograph kids in a park and people are not going to think you're a pedophile.
Right.
I'm a man, but I've had books published. So I use those to like explain to people what I'm doing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Use what you have.
Yeah, I think it was like, I forget, I think it was like Bruce Davidson or something said he used to carry around like 4x6s to show people what he did. I think it was Bruce. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Yeah. But I used to do that too when I was, I used to live in a tourist town, and it was great for what I was doing, because I was, you know, doing the documentary street photography thing, and it was just new people every week, and I would get to explain myself. It was so much easier. Now I'm living in like central Pennsylvania, where I get that look of like, is this guy like looking in my window right now? And I'm like, totally, no, I'm just, there's a pretty tree right there. I'm trying to, you know, kind of thing. You know, it's like, I'm not a creep, I promise.
Yeah. And I should say that the, you know, the 8x10 really helps with that, because again, it's so weird that, and so different that you wouldn't be a creepy window peeper with that camera.
Yeah, you're right.
Definitely
right.
Not.
And everyone goes to like old time photography, so it just throws them off. Yeah.
It's a good thing about those cameras.
Absolutely. Any,
like even like a twin lens reflex, I get stopped. Like, what is that? What is that? And like, well, can I take your photo?
Yeah. No, the worst thing is an SLR with a telephoto. You know, it's just like, you just look pervy no matter
like,
what.
Yeah. Or like, are you on vacation or what?
Yeah. Totally.
So what, Sleeping by the Mississippi is your first book, you know, you keep going down. Do you still get today like the same feeling you got when you shot that book? Like, are you still just as like jazzed about photography? And do you still get, because like I get the rush from just pushing the button. It's not so much the image. The image is a great result and fun and for me, but like I love the hunt kind of thing. Do you feel the same, or is it changed a lot through time?
I mean, no, everything changes. I've worked really hard to try to get in touch with that feeling that I originally had. Yeah. It's not the same, because it's not the same. And,
right.
And I'm not the same. I'm very aware that there's this whole kind of infrastructure built around me pushing the button. So I have to do a lot of work to create a situation in which I can forget about that infrastructure for a bit. But basically, I mean, I am very much a project photographer. So what I have to do then is like build up a time and a space, and then try to like create a situation in which I'm in the flow of the moment. But then the rest of the time I'm not.
Yeah. You know?
So it's a peculiar way of working. It's going to be really atypical for a lot of people listening, because like I have not taken for myself a still photograph in probably 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've done jobs and things and weird collaborative things, but like not personal project, personal work. And I always make the analogy to filmmaking. It's like making a motion picture. It's like Scorsese isn't walking around like with filming stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like does it when he's doing it. And I'm not saying I'm like Scorsese.
I mean, that's like a really good, when being when you have projects and like that's what you're focused on, then, you know, why would you go take a picture of the sunset, you know?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, and I'll do something with my phone or whatever, you know, but it's like a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really don't recommend that for everyone. It's like, I've noticed that there are project photographers and they're like daily photographers. There's just like different types. The key thing is to authentically like be the photographer you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just had an intern applying the other day, and he came wearing his Leica. And I was like, man, that's amazing. I wanted to be that guy.
Wow.
I tried it. Wow. I just felt false. I just wasn't me.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man. Yeah, because I'm the, you know, I wear my Leica necklace everywhere.
Me too.
I go.
I know.
And it's,
I think it's, and it's super cool. And I joined Magnum, and it's like all of these people wearing and doing that.
Uh-huh.
And whenever I try, it's just not me, you know? It's not who I am. It's kind of like what clothes you wear, you know? Like I would love to wear a suit, you know? Like,
yeah.
That would be super cool. But I'm not that dude.
Right.
I can relate to that. That's because like I always want to do, anytime I I wish I was better at the project, you know, like I have all these ideas and I don't know if it was your Magnum course or just something I saw on YouTube of just how your projects change, like while you're working on them too. And I just always get so, when I'm like, okay, I mean, this is just a random thing I'm going to throw out. It's like American flags are going to be my project this, and I'm going to work on it. And I won't take a picture of an American flag for 2 months then, you know what I mean? The second I tell myself I'm going to do that. It's just, how do you stay on task with that? How do you, you know?
Or do you kind of just let it transform?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's quite tricky because the whole danger is that for me is that if I, as a project photographer, and I say my project is American flags and I'm like targeting American flags, then the whole thing dies. It's like, flat, because I'm like illustrating an idea, and I have to create a project that has space in it and air in it so that I can like drive to an American flag, but then I see something over here and I can photograph it, but it has to be like be built into the concept in a way. And it's very delicate to get that balance right. And I mean, that's why it takes so long for me to do it, is I have to like come up with the idea and then change the idea and give space. And it's quite tricky. But, and I'm just adamant about this point of like you or what it's like, you don't have to be a project photographer. Like, don't force it in. It's kind of like if I were a musician and I like listen to, you know, a metal band, I'd be like, I want to be a metal band, but like, I'm not a metal. Yeah. Like, that's not who I am. You know, you play the music that you're supposed to play. It's hard to know what that is. And that takes some time to figure out what's authentic, you know?
Man, you nailed it. Cause I've been in a music phase recently and I wanted to be, you know, just throwing a nail. It's like, I want to be Mac DeMarco, you know, like I want to play some jingly fun stuff. And that's not what comes out. And now I'm kind of like, I've given into it cause I've written a couple songs and I'm like, this is actually better than what I was trying to do because it feels real to me. So that
absolutely.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think where it gets interesting though, is when you're like into that thing, you can't do it. Maybe you mix in just like a drop of it, you know, and it's like, and then it's a drop of like your interest in this thing, which is totally different. And then these meld and you find a slightly different voice.
Yeah, man, cool.
Or like drawing on inspiration from all different places.
All different places without like trying to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the tough part.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the hard part, especially now when we see everybody's work, you know, on our phones all the time. And we talk about this a lot on the show, but it's so easy to be like, well, I got to be like that, you know, and then go try and do that.
Yeah, it's really... I mean, that stuff's unbearable, that kind of thought process.
And
I really try to avoid it. And it's one of the reasons I chose living where I do. So I'm, in terms of art, like I didn't want to be surrounded by the art world. And you're right that like online, we're surrounded by this stuff now. And I feel grateful that I didn't have to navigate that in the same way early on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not to say I wasn't aware of things and didn't feel, you know, crushing envy or whatever. I still did.
Yeah.
That's real.
And it seems to like never go away. Uh-huh. You can't hide from it.
Yeah. It's just super unhealthy though.
Yeah.
It is.
Super, totally.
Like, get some therapy. If, you know, like, I had therapy. That's what I did this morning before this. So I'm fresh from therapy.
Mine's next Tuesday and I can't wait. I started to love it and rely on it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, good.
And also damning at the same time.
Yeah, we could take a left turn with this conversation.
Turn into a therapy session.
Yeah, could you tell us about your relationship with your mother?
Like, oh God, do you have the time for it today?
Exactly.
Well, speaking of therapy, I guess, I was recently thinking about how I have different phases of my life and how photography has been like, I think I might have talked about this last time, like the one constant thing that I know is never going to go away. Mm. Do you have that relationship with photography? Is it like the thing that fuels everything else in your life, or is it just something that you kind of do?
Oh, no. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, it's to a problematic extreme.
Mm.
Cause my whole identity is built around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I have kids and I like all this, you know, and it's a little scary. And then I get to a point where I haven't taken a picture for this many months. And it's like, who am I? Like, what?
Yeah.
What, am I just a guy who talks about my photography now? You know, so it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
At the level that I have it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just say, like, I just had a baby recently, 3 months.
Yeah.
And like one of my postpartum anxieties was like, I wasn't documenting him properly.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And I was talking to another friend who had a baby 2 months before me. She's like, that's so funny. That's not what my anxiety is about at all. Like, it's totally like your thing because of your photography. And I hadn't even thought, I was like, everybody must feel like they're not doing a good job. And I was like, I'm not shooting him enough on film. I like,
oh my God.
And you know, now it's like, I was thinking about like our childhood photos. Like there was one shot of me and my brother on the bench or whatever, right?
Yeah, right.
And now with the phone, I have 37,000 pictures of him just doing one thing.
But it's fine. It's fine. He's been documented. It's okay.
Yeah.
I need to like, whew.
It's interesting though. When we had our first child, I felt this relief actually. It was like this moment where I cared about something else finally.
Oh yeah.
And it was, but then like eventually, you know, the ego comes rushing back in. It's all about me again.
Teenagers are like, Dad, get away from me. You're like, well, fine, I'm gonna go take pictures.
Yeah, it's not a problem with them.
Yeah,
but yeah, it is funny. And then I did make work out of that, but not of my kids. And my kids are like super undocumented. I mean, they're undocumented children. new meaning to that term.
Yeah.
No. And it's a family joke, you know, the cobbler's, child wears no shoes. So it's, my kids are like, they're barely pictures of them other than phone pictures.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Are it's any of fine. Them into photography at all or show any interest? No.
No, I did. Weirdly, I did a collaborative project with my daughter when she was 7. And it was amazing because she was 7. Like, it was part of my argument is that self-consciousness and consciousness of one's peer group screws over your work.
Yep.
And so she was like able to see and take cool things. And then, she turned into a teenager, and then it's just every picture is like every other picture. And she's not into it. It's not what she wants to do with her life.
Yeah, yeah.
She is interested in sort of the business of photography and art generally.
Oh, interesting. That's cool. Yeah, she does get to see that side. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was traveling with me last week in Berlin and like meeting different people and galleries and all that kind of stuff. I mean, she's 19. That side of things. And then my son's a skateboarder. And so, you know, there's this whole tradition of skateboarders getting into photography.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, be careful.
Yeah. And that has not transpired, but it's now because I understand skateboarding much better through him, I'm fascinated by this. And so like at this book signing I just did, like I see him coming, I'm like, oh, there's a skateboarder.
Yeah.
I can tell. and then I kind of quiz them on this relationship because it's quite fascinating, I think.
Yeah, there's a big connection in that world, and we've been lucky enough to get a bunch of pro skaters and pro, photographers in the skate world, and just to see how the similarities in the stories are just so, because I was a skateboarder, I won't say I am anymore being 41, I'm just that old weird guy that's going down the street sometimes on a skateboard, but it's just funny like how just that community just all kind of, you know, it all relates, and it's just so neat. I love it.
But here's an interesting like pushback on it that I'll give, and it relates to my son, right? So he was like, he wanted me to film, you know, video for him, right? So he's doing some trick, and then he wants it all like fisheye, and he's got to like, and there's like a way to do it, right?
Uh huh.
And I'm like, here's the problem with you skateboarding people is that like, there's a way to do it. So like, you're supposed to do this trick this way. You're supposed to wear the clothes this way. You're supposed to wear this kind of hat.
Yeah.
And like, find a new way, like do a new trick, create your own style. Like, you know what I mean? And this is where the translation can be problematic into photography. I mean, if you're just doing it for fun in the same way that you do skating for fun, whatever, do whatever you want. But it's like, if you want to be distinctive, you want to bring something else to the table. It's not just following the formula, right?
Right.
Kind of go outside the box a little bit, do something different and new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird. It's kind of like punks. Like, I don't know who said it, but it's like, you know, there was no one more formulaic at the time than punks, you know, like they all dress the same way.
Yep.
And there is an element to that. And so you got to, allow yourself to be that goofball, you know, that like wears the wrong sneakers or whatever.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It wears like the Air Jordans or something instead.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I love that. I also wanted to ask you about your book collection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're getting kind of a view of it right behind
you here. We're kind of drooling this whole time looking at it.
But I started watching this documentary about the book collecting that I didn't realize it was like its own industry. Like, do you consider yourself like in that realm of collecting?
I really don't. I'm very familiar with it. So you know, it's ideal. You know, I encounter in my line of work or whatever, I encounter lots of book dealers. And so I know that world.
Yeah.
And I know some serious book collectors. Mine is so much a working library, and so they're beat up. And because I'll look for really obscure books. I mean, I got one the other day, but it's like no dust jacket, scribbling on it. I don't care. I just want to see it and be able to like learn from it. So it's really not about that. And I don't care if it's signed, first edition,
right,
all that stuff. So it's a working library.
And I wish more people would go to the, I think it's becoming a lot more popular than it at least was in this, you know, the new generation of photographers are now starting to see the importance of, I mean, there's literally nothing better than grabbing a photo book and learning and making notes. And that's why I love your YouTube channel too. The YouTube videos you've been putting out, those little, like, I guess they're essays or something. I don't know what they call them.
I don't know what they call them either.
they're just so, I mean, I don't want to, this isn't a knock, but I put them on when I'm going to sleep. You know what I mean?
No,
I just put it on and prop it up on a pillow. And
not at all the first person to say that. So, it's so funny because like when I first started it, I mean, first of all, I don't consume YouTube. So like, so I just knew nothing about the world of it. And nor did I have a big plan to be a YouTuber.
Right.
It was really, I did it because it was the pandemic and I was trying to show people that I had a different way of giving a lecture, basically, because I developed this way of showing physical objects in a lecture. And so I like did it and then I got into it and just did more and more of it. I mean, the experience of the YouTube has been super fascinating. Oh, yeah. So when I started it, and I was like, oh, wow. So YouTube, like I see how this, the monetization of it, right? And it wasn't a goal, whatever. And I'm just like, that's interesting. I'm just going to play with these tools. And so like turned it on. And so ads would pop up in the middle. And then I got these angry comments that are like, dude, I'm trying to fall asleep. I use your voice to fall asleep. This is bumming me out.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I turned those off. I have them at the beginning, end, or whatever. I'm really not into it to make money, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's been a very meaningful experience making those videos, for sure. And I mean, this is kind of an interesting subject for the analog podcast, which is, you know, being created in this digital medium of the podcast is how we interact with digital tools using an analog form. And so, you know, I have a mixed relationship with all of these things, but I was a big blogger in the early days of blogging.
Yep. Same.
And then, you know, Facebook kind of killed it. And I was like very anti-Facebook, still not on it.
Yeah, not a fan.
But yeah, it was kind of, but whatever. I had ideas in my head. And then Instagram came along. I was really anti-Instagram. I hated the filters and everything. And then someone finally talked me into it. And then I like was immediately sucked in, you know, and liked it.
Yep.
I did Snapchat for a while out of curiosity. And then I was like, TikTok. No, wait, TikTok. Like, and then, but you know what? 4 days ago, I did my first TikTok, and I'm now like,
oh, I love that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because awesome. I saw someone our listener asked about your TikTok, and I was like, he's not on TikTok.
I just started.
Ooh.
And no, because it's like,
Talk about getting sucked in. Watch out.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, I've always learned something from doing these things. So like,
yeah.
Even if it doesn't work, like Snapchat, whatever. And I really dislike Instagram now. I'm down on it.
Yeah.
It's not,
same.
Yeah. But you know, I learned a ton from it. This YouTube thing, I've learned so much from that experience. I, you know, did an NFT thing. I've learned from that experience. It's not like it's going to be the rest of my life doing these things. I'm not going to turn into a TikToker or whatever.
But I'm be like doing already, the dances in no time.
Yeah, totally.
I know. Can you imagine?
Totally. But already I'm like, oh, I see what's happening over here a little bit. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I've had fun. I made a couple TikToks of showing some photo books or showing my favorite cameras or, you know, my favorite photographers kind of thing. And it's really neat because, I mean, just how media and stuff like that is going right now, you know, there's like a 23-second attention span. You know, if it doesn't grab you in that.
There is, but there's also people who will listen to an hour-long podcast. And then you realize that only way they're going to find out about the hour-long podcast is if they listen to the 15-second clip. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you have to figure out how to engage with those things without getting lost in them.
Right.
It's such a balancing act. Yeah.
Especially because the reach on TikTok is
apparently
infinite.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 300 followers now, but
congrats.
So we'll check back.
Yeah.
When you up to millions, I'm sure.
I don't know. Well, it's really a different audience, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I look, it's so funny. Like Magnum has like 300 followers. It's like, it's weird. Like the corporations haven't like, not all of them have gone in on it, or the museums and all that stuff. And of course it will die once they do. And it'll move somewhere else, right?
There's always a new one popping up.
The next one, yeah.
Absolutely. I still think Tumblr was the best.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, Tumblr.
I go to mine every once in a while and look at it, and I'm like, man, I miss you. You were so
good. No, we just had it. Like, we'd figured it out. We, like, the artists had control. It didn't have all this stuff flying all over it.
Yeah, yeah.
The video photos look good. They're big. You could change the way they looked. It was awesome.
It was.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotta bring that back somehow.
Well, it's, you know, it is trendy right now, actually. Like, people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. It's not like gonna be a thing, but it's, but yeah, I've heard it's trendy.
Well, that's kind of like anything that goes away and people are nostalgic for it.
Yeah, totally. Cassettes.
Cassettes, records.
I've been collecting them again like crazy. I have a ton of cassettes again. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta get a Walkman.
I have one right up here. I actually have two, Chris. I'll send you one. I'll send you my extra one.
What about the iPod? You know, you heard that. They just killed it off the other day,
I know.
Right?
That's going to be something that people are going to want to collect. Watch.
Oh, absolutely. No. Yeah. Well, no doubt about it. No, because I know I had an intern who was like, because there was one particular like generation of iPod, I guess, that had like better audio quality or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like the circuitry was, I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'd love it. There's a niche for all this stuff. Like there's,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it.
And plus like people like to have, like to own all their music and have it all in their hand, you know?
Yeah.
Like when the classic died, a friend of mine was like, I need to get one. I have all this music. I want to have it. I'm like, but it's Spotify. Like, what are you talking about? Like Spotify, you don't have to worry about it. It's not the same. He wanted it. Like,
no, it's like a mixtape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not the same as a Spotify playlist.
It's not.
You put the effort in. You had to sit there.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
I used to love making mixtapes, man.
Totally.
Yeah.
I have like a thing that happened to me last night, and I kind of wanted to get your guys' like thoughts on it. A friend of mine that I used to work with doesn't care about photography at all, whatever, blah, blah, blah. She went to this event where somebody had a film camera, and they took her photo, and she saw the photo. And then the next thing I know, she's like, I need to get a film camera. And the next thing I know, she's messaging me like, is this a good one? What should I get? And I just was thinking about how, because of the iPhone photos and the way they look, and then her seeing a film photo and being like, what is this? And wanting to like, and I just thought that was like, because we obviously we have our community, film community, and we've been in it and stuff like that. But somebody from the outside.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a thing.
You know?
No, it's without a doubt, it's a thing. Again, in Berlin last week at this museum, they had a photo booth, but it was a true, you know, chemical
photo.
Thing came out wet, you know?
Yes.
It was like, my daughter's like, wow. And it just, it looked different. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, there's absolutely like an appeal for it. I mean, that's, you know, like vinyl sales, like everything. It's just, it'll get big, but it's not going to get, you know, the big of the.
Right. Yeah.
We still, that's the thing about like book publishing is the numbers are minuscule in terms of like social media or whatever. If you sell 5,000 books, it's like unbelievable, but it's still 5,000. It's like, and it's 5,000 people that care.
Yeah.
Which is worth more than 100,000 people that like look at it for an eighth of a second.
Right.
Yeah. That's the killer for me with like Instagram is just, you know, being so jazzed on a photo you're going to post and then it's just a flip through in somebody's mind. It just breaks my spirit. So
that's why you should just make a print and like hang it up somewhere.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I've given up on Instagram.
Yeah.
Have you?
I mean, I think it's been about 6 months since I made a post, but I was gone for about 6 months before that. And I was like, I'm making my comeback and made a post about how it was great to be gone. And then I started therapy and it was just like, wait, I actually feel, and like, when you're like, I'm not going to go on it this week, but you still feel yourself going for the app button to hit it. Yeah, and I was doing that. I don't even do that anymore. I don't have that like, oh, I got to, you know, I got to check this. I got to do
you
this.
Kicked
I gotta,
it. You
yeah,
kicked
it's, it. It. And it's,
yeah,
it's a great feeling. And like, I appreciate my photography more doing that now too. I'm like, this is worth holding on to and like, you know, building something with it rather than just giving it away and getting my couple hundred likes and then it's gone. You know, it's just like,
I'll tell you the problem I have, because I would love to do that. But the problem I have is that, you know, I am passionate about the book. And and so like I did that book signing in Berlin and there were a zillion people there and that's because I posted it on Instagram. And but the thing is I can't just post one promotional thing on Instagram. I have to give give it real content.
Right.
Stay engaged.
So it's a real dilemma for me.
It is.
Yeah, I know. If anyone figures it out, but I guess it's like the work life balance. You just gotta find the balance, teach yourself how to have restraint.
Yeah, especially now with having my son, my husband, I'm like, we should have like off phone hours. You know, just
I know I'm terrible.
Just put it away.
Yeah. I know,
man.
We need therapists for that.
Yeah.
Or like life coaches or something.
Yeah.
Photo life coaches. That's what we need.
We do.
There's a business opportunity.
That's what I'm going to do once I leave the music store. I'll be your photo coach.
Yeah, your photo life coach. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
Can I swing back and talk about the books again?
Mm-hmm.
How is Little Brown Mushroom going?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably not clear. So for people listening, Little Brown Mushroom was a name that I gave this DIY, you know, publishing operation. And we did that for a number of years. And basically, for me, it was like a place to collaborate, to make these little things that weren't about money at all. And just to experiment and try stuff with different artists. And then it got like bigger and bigger and it was turning into a real business. And
that was
killing the fun for me. So I basically stopped the publishing and then I started doing these experimental workshops and ended up doing a big one that like was teenagers. We went cross country into Winnebago, did all this stuff. And that was amazing. But then that was like, if I continued this is going to like, I'm going to be a full-time educator. I don't want to do that. So I killed that off. So Little Brown Mushroom is basically my like sandbox where I get to play around. And like, I was just pitching a business idea of the life coach. Like I like pretend businesses or you know, sort of Shark Tank ideas, but I don't really want to do the thing full time.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's what Little Brown Mushroom is. And so we don't publish anymore.
Yeah. I was wondering about that. I didn't know if you were still or not.
No. Yeah. We stopped. Also, I have an amazing publisher. So I work with him And and in terms of collaborative things, which I'm doing, like I'm collaborating with this musician for the last couple years, and we do these performances. It's hard to explain, but and then that's cool. Like that's feeding my experimental goof around time. And if that ever turns in, it won't, but if that ever turned anything really big, I would kill it off too. Yeah,
man, that's so funny because it's like the total opposite of what everyone else is doing. They're like, they're doing this thing to get it, you know, to pop off and be something. But I totally get that too, because once you're, it's funny because I always laugh at your story of you didn't want to be the sheep guy, you know. I just think that's such a great, you know, because I always loved the Williamson County Fair when I was living in Nashville. That was, you know, the county fair, you know, it's just right. it's a smorgasbord of everything, and it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I was starting to get a little traction on my county fair, you know. Uh-huh. The fair wanted to pay me to go there and do, you know. Yeah. And I'm like, right. wait a minute, I don't want to be so I totally can relate to that. That's cool.
But I also, you know, I should say that I can say in this cavalier things, like kill things off, because I have a central career.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With all of the complexities involved around it and all of the like sacrifices and financial stresses and all those things. So it's like a grown-up business that I have to sustain. But because I have that, I can play around on the edges, you know?
Yeah. Little side projects.
Side projects, yeah.
Totally. That's got to take the pressure off the big picture stuff too.
Exactly. A little bit for you. It's a place to blow off steam. And exactly. Yeah. Which is not, I don't want to overstate the main career path, but it's just a little different that way.
Cool.
I love it.
We'll be right back with a couple listener questions for Alec right after this message from our sponsor.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Just wanted to pop in quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We develop some film, we talk shop, we laugh, we have a good time. We've done a bunch of these already. It's just great getting to hang out with you guys and develop some film. Even if you don't develop film and you just want to hang, it's always a good time. And like I always say, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. If it sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk.
All right, guys, this is part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners, and we're going to do two for Alec today. The first one comes from Jasper.vw, and they ask, how does Alec use images to weave together a narrative/story/message? That's a good one. It's a deep one.
Yeah, it's a deep question, and it's tricky because a word like narrative, I always get tripped up on, because to me, narrative, you know, suggests a story with a beginning, middle, and end. Mm. And that's not how I think of photo books working. They're like, there's so many gaps. And what I think of, I'm doing is, you know, trying to create these spaces, these gaps for the reader or viewer to imagine filling them in. So they're kind of like crafting their own narrative a little bit. And I would say the same about the word message. Like, I don't know that I want to give a message. I kind of want the viewer to like put their own message into it, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. But it's tricky because you have to like, you have to give people something, you know, you can't just be like a smattering of total random fragments or else it's too much work to put it together. So it's like building it, but leaving space. And if you overbuild it, if you like, if it is a story or a message, then it kind of doesn't work in the form very well. So it's like this scaffolding that the viewer, you know, builds the building. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like too, you said, I think it was on one of your YouTube videos, you were like, you know, not every photo has to be, you know, an amazing photo in the photo book. Like use the other photo, like some of the other photos to kind of get you to the, you know,
Absolutely. Right.
I really like that. That was good.
Yeah. It's because that goes against the mindset of like, every picture is a killer. You still want them to be good and, you know, functional. And there's no way, like, it's impossible. Like, the greatest photo books in the world, they're not, and not every picture is a killer.
I like that what you said about letting the viewer figure out the story, I guess. It's like that, like the ending of Inception, you know, did it fall or did it not fall? Like, I like happy endings. So I think it fell, you know.
But you know, cinema is a great example, though, because it's like cinema does tell a story the way we think of it. And of course, there's experimental cinema that doesn't do that. But the medium has been shaped in a largely narrative direction. So that's the form.
Right.
I wouldn't say that's the case with photography. It's kind of true in the photo essay, in the world of the magazine photo essay. But that is a different room in the castle of photography.
Yeah, I like that castle of photography.
That's the first time I've ever said that phrase.
I like it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great answer and great question too. We'll give you another one.
We'll give you one more here. Mm-hmm. This one comes from former guest Aiden Klemenko, and he wanted to know best advice for a young photographer trying to break into the fine art world.
I mean, I'm gonna start with something annoying. So. which is, because it's just annoying to hear an older person say this, but patience. I'll speak through analogy. So if just imagine you're a novelist and you want to break into the world of publishing a novel, you're not going to go to a publisher and say like, I got this great idea for a novel, and they're not going to give you a deal, right? It's your first novel. You got to write the novel. And it's got to be good.
Yeah.
And so that is going to take you 10 years to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're also working jobs and and you have to find your voice and do all this stuff. It's really hard. And then if you're lucky enough to finally get to publish that novel, it might be easier to publish the second one, you know? But that first one is just really hard to get to. And, every novelist has to go through that. And it's really not that different in any other field. It can be a little different because there's sort of like age differences. So like music skews really young, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of different. And in different areas of photography, it might be the case. Like in the Instagram world, it probably skews younger. In my world of like photo book publishing and the fine art market, actually, it just takes more time to do that.
Yeah.
So you got to be patient and not spend all of your energy on promotion until the novel's done. Promote it after.
I used to have, when I was doing like making YouTube videos and stuff, I used to try to be, you know, the Matt Days and the George from Negative Feedback. Like I wanted to be one of those too. And every video I'd be like, and I have all these plans coming up. I'm going to do a video on this, on this. And I promise. And then I would never do it. And it would just really kind of wears people out of expectation and all this stuff. Yep. So, you know, not.
Yeah. And not, I have a lot of, you know, I see a lot of people self-promoting like crazy and the, you know, and the work's just not there yet. Mm. And I get it. Mm. And, you know, and I was hungry for it too when I was young. One, the way I dealt with it was I was like, I tried read, you know, in my town, to try to get a show or do a little thing or whatever, but it wasn't like to break out into the, you know, stratosphere or whatever. Just like, you know, and that's the equivalent of like, you know, you have a band. Okay, let's play some local shows. We're not doing, you know, Madison Square Garden. Like, we're figuring stuff out. Yep. And then once we get our like shit together, we have an album where like we know what we're doing, then let's try to like bring this wider.
Yep. What do they say? You got to walk before you can run.
Yeah.
But I also know how annoying that is to hear that. And I remember being young and hearing that kind of stuff and just be like, ugh, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so I get that also.
Man, so true.
It's good.
Yeah. And then, you know, for more practical advice, I found it never works to approach anyone. It's like like to knock on a gallery door does not work. So to approach a publisher doesn't work. They have to find you, or someone has to tell them to look at you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they're approached by things all the time.
And,
right.
And to throw one more analogy at you, I think of it as like when you decide to go to a movie, for example, you don't just go to every movie. You know?
Yeah.
Someone has told you the movie's good. You've read somewhere that it's good. It's not the movie maker saying, my movie's good, you need to see it. Because they're all going to say that.
Yeah.
So you need to hear it. You need to hear it from someone trusted, you know? So it's like, it's hard to do that. So, and you know, in my own case, my first gallery, it was a different artist at that gallery recommended me, you know? And that's the only way for me.
Yeah, it's like word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
When I was shooting weddings, I booked more weddings from people just who were at the weddings I already shot or knew somebody.
Absolutely.
It was never, the advertisement you paid for.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, yeah, it's just, and of course those things happen, but it's incredibly rare that you're just going to like knock on a publisher's door unless the work is so like mind-blowingly great.
Right.
Yeah. And you have to be aware of how much they're looking at because it's just, it's never ending. And now, you know, one of the cool things about being older and stuff is I've seen it from the other side, or I've been like a judge at a contest and you're just like, wow, there's so much, you know?
Wow.
So if a friend of mine tells me, oh, this is amazing, I'll be like, okay, I'll check that out. Yeah.
Man.
I love that.
Yeah. Great, great answer on that one.
Cool. The first answer sucked, but that one was good. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think they were both good.
That's how neurotic I am. Anyone says anything positive to me, I like take it as a negative for something else. That's the therapy talk.
I can relate to that as well.
I overanalyze literally everything anybody ever says to me, so I understand.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Well, okay, so now.
Give them the camera questions.
We're going to give you the camera question.
Oh, yeah.
This is a two-part question.
Ooh.
The first part is if you were stranded on a desert island and you could only have one camera, you can only shoot with one camera for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
I'm not going to go literal on the desert island because the wind would be a factor in my answer here because I would choose the Philips and Sons 8x10 camera that I had. So it was super light.
Oh.
And it didn't have like extensive movements, which I don't need. So it was a field 8x10 that was incredibly simple, incredibly light, but it would have maybe some problems in the wind on the desert island. It was that camera. And I'm really excited because I just learned about a guy in Europe that could potentially repair it.
Man, that's a win.
Yeah, because
that is a win.
So Dick Phillips was the maker of this camera, and I think he was in Michigan, and he's an older guy, and he retired at a certain point, and that was it. They come up for sale, whatever, but I also just don't have the temperament to keep track of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
That would be the one. Yeah.
Solid island answer.
So here's the second part.
Yes.
Is there any cameras that you're lusting after right now? Any white whale, something that you either haven't shot and would love to try, or like something you had and you got rid of? And
analog cameras? Has to be.
It could be whatever. Yeah. I mean, just please don't let it be an iPhone, but you know.
No, it's not an iPhone.
The iPhone 5. It was. I really missed that camera.
That's interesting. Well, because I'm playing with moving images, right? And one of the problems that I'm encountering is that these cameras are so expensive that you have to rent them.
Yeah.
But if you rent them, I feel I don't have the flexibility to like, oh, I want to go out today. Like, oh, the weather's amazing today.
Yeah.
If I could have a camera, it would probably be. Yeah, like a very high-end cinema camera that I could actually own and be flexible with.
Yeah.
Which it's not unlike the feeling, particularly in the early days of digital, when you'd have like this, you know, $70,000 digital camera.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of people's dream camera, but you couldn't get it, you know,
right.
Or you could only rent it for a day. So, because moving image stuff I'm curious about. Not like making movies, but just... just like barely moving pictures.
Man.
What do you have? Do you have an Alexa? Or is that what you're like?
Without giving anything away, I've been playing with this Phantom Flex camera. If you ever heard of that?
I haven't. Yeah. See, I'm not up on that end of things.
It's a crazy universe.
But
I'm dealing with like focus pulling and all these, stuff.
Fun, but
I realized like I can't just run out and do it. You know, it's like, you know, for that particular camera, I've had a van following me.
Oh, wow.
Because we're like tethered to the van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Man.
Ooh, can't wait to see what comes of all that.
My mind's wondering what's cooking.
But I did just a more prosaic answer. I did just buy a Canon 35mm camera because I had my first camera was a Canon AE-1 that my dad gave me.
Yeah.
And I did this little mini project and bought not an A1. Is it A1? F.
There's A1, F1.
F1.
It was the A1, but not the AE-1.
I got you.
Anyway, yeah.
I bought one of those and took my first 35mm picture in like 20 years and had such a blast.
Oh, that's exciting.
Great.
Really great. Man. Really great.
Man.
You should have that one around your neck.
I should.
Carrying that everywhere.
I should.
Yeah.
And check this out. I'm going to blow people's minds right now.
Uh-oh.
I have never taken a photograph with a 35mm rangefinder.
Really?
Wow. My mind is blown.
Right?
Man. That's
crazy.
Wild.
I like to see focus. I like to see.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
why I like the Pentax 6x7. That's why I like the 8x10. I've had rangefinders. I had a Mamiya 6. But it relates to this feeling of space. I like to see the space coming in and out. And
That's wild, man. Man, one more film-related question for you before we wrap it up here. Are you ever concerned about not being able to get 8x10 film? Yeah,
yes.
Okay. I just... Are you like a hoarder? Do you?
No, I'm not a hoarder. It's so off the charts expensive now that
I know. Yeah.
And so when I work with it, I try to pretend the money doesn't exist. I just
you have to.
And that is that relates to the project based thing though too. And it's like, you know, treating it like a movie where you have to raise money to do it at that point.
Yeah.
But it's outrageous and it's really problematic for sure.
And
I wouldn't be surprised if it goes away soon. Mm-hmm. And that would be a bummer.
I'm crying.
No, it's tough. I mean, I think things are safe in smaller formats, I think.
Yeah.
So
a lot of things are happening.
Yeah, a lot of things are happening. Yeah, I think it's okay. There's not a lot of need to make it that large. And even 4x5 is pushing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, prices, man, just crazy. Yeah, I was just curious. I was curious if you had a little worry in your mind, or maybe you had a warehouse full of it. I didn't know.
No, there's been a history of that in the printing of stuff. So like dye transfer printing, and there were hoarders of that, and they've like just run out now. You know, whatever 30 years or whatever after discontinued it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just don't have that mentality again. Yeah.
That's what Eggleston used, right?
And so like the people that printed for him hoarded it and it's incredible stuff. It for sure. There's a reason to hoard it.
It's magical. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Well, great.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time to chat photography with us. This is a dream.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you. Where can everybody, if you want to plug yourself, where can everybody check out your work?
TikTok, baby. Go to
TikTok. Here we go.
I mean, my website is alexsoth.com. My Instagram is littlebromushroom. Mm-hmm. My TikTok is alexsoth.
Yeah, I'm going to that right now.
I'm trying to build something over there. We'll see.
Yeah. All right.
My YouTube is, I don't know what it is. It's something. Maybe it's Alex Oth. I don't know.
If you just go to the search bar and search Alex Oth, it'll come up. Yeah.
It'll pop up. But yeah, I'm not here to pimp anything right now. Just
gotcha. Okay.
Cool. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, go to Instagram and Twitter. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also have some older YouTube stuff over there, you know, just like that. Go to the search bar, search Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of stuff there. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And we have Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram.
Cool.
And Facebook too. Yeah.
Awesome.
But Alec, thank you, thank you, thank you. This has been wonderful.
All right, you guys. You take care.
We'll see you next time, guys. Bye.
All right. First off, Chris and I want to thank Alec for coming on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us, to tell your story, to give us some inspiration, and, you know, just what a crazy, awesome career it is that you've had. And we love following it. And it's so inspiring. And again, thank you so much. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hangs over there. Some other Patreon-exclusive stuff. And like we say, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. Man, this was such a great episode. Such a good time. And we will see you guys with an all-new episode next week. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.